Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode. So today we have, I'd say, a very good friend of someone that I've known for 20 years now. Playing footy as a skinny 19-year-old. Now I'm a fat 36-year-old. So you said it before we're on air. That's how you described
outrageous.
Me to Hamish. But why I wanted to get Dan on today is there's huge changes to the legislation in Victoria around building, from owner protection to builder protection to, like, it's really everything's changed.
Don't think there's any builder protection, just between us.
Really?
Yeah.
So this is what I want to understand, because I think it's quite scary and I understand what they're trying to do. So from my opinion, it seems they're trying to give consumers confidence back into building. Yeah. But also understand on the flip side that, yeah, it might not benefit us. But I think the way Hamish and I build, it's probably not going to affect us as much.
Oh, I think the trickle-down effect is that we're going to get impacted. I mean, I'm just getting across all these new changes as we speak. I mean, I know we've got a group chat at the moment where you're chatting about the progress claim changes, and I'm still trying to get my head around that, because how can we run our projects if there's no method B?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, that's, I think, just so we don't get, you know, too ahead of ourselves and excited, the changes around using method B and progress payments have actually not been one. They haven't been enacted yet.
Right, okay.
So they're actually before Parliament at the moment, and they actually haven't come up with the mechanism of how they are going to do progress payments. Yep. What the theory is they want to use modern methods of construction. That's kind of the oversight on the overview, I should say, on how they want to look at doing new progress payments. What the way progress payments will be done will eventually be done by way of regulation. Currently, Regulation 2 of the old Domestic Building Contracts Act allowed for Method B. I would suspect that you're probably still going to be able to use Method B, but there's going to be more ways of doing it. So So in terms of protection for builders, it's more like opening up opportunities for builders.
Because they're also talking about increasing the amount you can do for a deposit as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the current Domestic Building Contracts Act was enacted in 1995.
Great.
When I was just a youngster.
Last time Carlton won a premiership.
Yeah, that's how long ago it was. And like Carlton, it's extremely outdated with some of the things that it prohibits and allow. So deposits, for example, 5%, like, you can't even pay for insurance barely.
Yeah, yeah.
And once they start doing the big thing for builders and consumers is going to be the new insurance regime.
Yes.
Okay, and that's going to be passed down from, and even like developer bonds, right? That's going to be passed down by the developer to the builder, that cost.
So it's 2%. So developer bonds is an extra 2% that the developer must hold for a year.
Yeah.
And essentially to pay for fixes.
Yeah.
And they're never going to get that back.
No,
there's no chance.
No, because like the owners and the owners corporation is most developments are going to be more than one lot, which means there's common property, which means there's owners corps are just going to hold them as almost like a replacement for the maintenance fund.
I mean, I'm not a smart man, but aren't developers just going to increase their prices? By
exactly, that's what I mean. So they're just going to, it's just going to be an increase.
Increase the price.
It's just going to increase everything, and it's going to be, hey, builder, you're going to have to get this insurance to cover me for this developer bond because I can't afford it, and
just put it on the bill and we'll charge everyone else.
Yeah, so everyone, the consumer, ends up paying. I just noticed, is that a Whopper, your tattoo? Because
it's a burger.
One of my nicknames at footy was Captain Whopper.
So just to sidetrack. So my son Phoenix, his nickname is Burger.
Oh, nice!
So love it. That's why I've got a.
I love
it. That's why I've got a burger on my forearm.
Yeah. Sorry, I took us off track.
No, don't worry. We love that anyway.
I should have eaten.
We love a side track.
Not four, not four coffees.
Hang on, just to go back a sec. That's for developers, not for builders.
Yeah, but they'll eventually just say to the builder, like, you need to build this cost into your contract and then pass that on to the owner.
Yes, so there's insurance you can take out. Yeah. So you can either hold 2% in a cash deposit at the end of the build, it's 2% of the contract price, or you can then take that or you can have an insurance which is going to be like hundreds of thousands of dollars you can take out.
Yeah.
Because the reality is they're going to use that funds. There'll be their incentive, like they're just going to find things to fix.
Yeah, okay.
Which is, I understand why they're doing it, because at the moment the issue we have is they're just, and I shouldn't say just developers, but people just build and there's no, you would know better, they just send themselves, they Phoenix the company. And
Yeah, correct. I mean, developers are normally like $2 companies, and even though it might, like say, I won't use a name because I don't want to defame anyone, but let's say it's
Sanctum Home.
S.U.S. Pyman instead of someone else, they might just have that company, or, you know, call it Pyman's Homes, might have, like, Pyman Home number one, and then they'll just, you know, once that company doesn't exist anymore, the next project will be done in a different development company name and a different development company name.
Oh, so they've worked out a system, and this is what they're stopping.
Like, one of the big kind of developers at the moment is, I think they're on their, like, fifth or sixth company. That's the development company. Builders is much harder to do because now the new Building and Plumbing Commission and the old VBA, through its insurance arm, will just refuse you insurance. If Matt Carland has been a director, which he hasn't, by the way, of an insolvent entity, they will just not insure Matt Carland anymore. So you'll have to find someone to go in.
The director, okay. Yeah.
And that's hard to do because you've got to be registered, you've got to have asset base. So they're look, basically the summary of all of this is, and the genesis of it, is one, the outdated Domestic Building Contracts Act, two, the collapse of a couple of major builders like Porter Davis. There's a couple of other kind of smaller, there's one in New South Wales.
So this is just practically, but this is only for Victoria though. This
is only in Victoria, but this problem exists Australia-wide.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So we're the test pilot really for everyone
else. We are a little bit low. New South Wales is way ahead of us. They've had this type of kind of regime. They've got a different regime to us in terms of insurance and deposit bonds and it's called decennial insurance, which is essentially defect-based insurance instead of, oh, you've got to go insolvent first before we pay out.
Because the issue I have with insurance at the moment is we bake the domestic building insurance. Yeah. We pay the same – we've been on the same limit as pre-COVID, yet prices have gone up twofold, but they haven't increased our limits or in our job capacity.
Yeah.
And the amount that they're charging now is, I think, nearly 3x of what it was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
What I probably am more interested in, like a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now is probably not as relevant to most of our listeners. When we start talking about developers and all that kind of stuff,
what are some
of the major changes that we're going to be seeing that are going to impact us resi builders that are doing 4 to 8 homes a year?
Yeah. So I'll just say almost all, apart from, I mean, Matt mentioned deposit bonds for developers. But other than that one, which even if you're doing a two-lot subdivision, that can apply.
Yeah, okay.
You are cut every single piece of this new piece of legislation, and there was another one earlier last year that's already been introduced, that introduced the new Building and Plumbing Commission, the new insurance regime. The new insurance regime covers every builder in Victoria under all jobs, okay?
So including commercial?
Just resi.
Yeah.
With commercial's always kind of been its own beast.
Yeah.
And it's not, because it's not a consumer. You know, you're dealing with probably a high-end kind of client. When you've got mum and dad homeowners building, this act and this amendment covers that. So you've got a new type of insurance that is going to start almost certainly from the 1st of July next year. That's going to be as distinct from what it is now, which is you have to basically kill your builder by way of insolvency or actually he dies to make a claim. This is going to be first resort. So Matt is going to get not Matt because he
you can use me as an example.
Doesn't do defective work or Hamish.
You just sort of say
you might have got you might have been to the this new. Part of the plumbing commission, the building plumbing commission is essentially what used to be the old DBDRV. You might get a rectification order or a rectification notice. If you don't answer that within 14 days, that triggers an insurance policy.
So is that answering, it's like fixing or be like, oh no, we're onto it, but it's going to take us 10 days?
Yeah, as the build, we're not sure how it's going to work because it hasn't even
been tested
yet.
Yeah, okay.
But the theory behind it is get a rectification notice. Have essentially fought, you've got to say, hey, I dispute this, or, and if you dispute it, you've got to go to appeal, okay? Or you've got to fix the work, or you need to say, I need more time, which is probably what you're saying.
But does that then hold my license on pause doing my other projects?
That's not really, it's not a licensing thing. This is just insurance.
Okay. So, they're under one banner though. Now
yeah, they are. So, but you are right to an extent that if you refuse to do it and then the insurance pays out, they're gonna strip you of your license. They're gonna strip you of insurance, which strips you of the ability to trade.
Let's just wind it back just for a minute and just talk about how someone makes a claim now.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about how, and then it probably makes more sense what we're talking about, you know, in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
So what is the mechanism to make a claim to make a claim against your home warranty insurance now? What conditions need to exist?
Builder has to have died.
Mm-hmm.
Insolvent. Now, insolvent means any form of external administration. So for Hamish & Co. Proprietary Limited, that would have to be you being wound up, which is actually an extreme measure. Okay,
yep.
It doesn't happen very often and you get a lot of chances to defend that. Disappears, which is really not known and it's never been tested.
We're not in Mexico.
No, exactly. And the third, fourth step, which only came in 2018, is if a court orders you to pay money.
Right.
And that takes an owner going all the way, getting judgment and you not paying. Okay. So those steps are actually quite rare.
Yeah. Okay.
Builder dying, building becoming insolvent. Okay. Obviously, Porter Davis, yes. Disappears, doesn't exist, never been tested. Court orders happen, but I'll just tell you, I do 100 cases, you know, at any one time. We would get court orders in 1 to 2 of those matters max because everything settles and everything resolves before a court order because mainly the builder doesn't want an insurance claim.
Yep. So now...
It's called last resort for a reason. It just never gets paid out.
Now we're looking down the barrel of a court order straight up.
Yeah, it's more a rectification order by the Building and Plumbing Commission, not a court, which can be done with someone coming out and going, oh, the cornice is like crooked or cracked or there's a missing piece of downpipe. Rectification order, they can just hand it to you or issue it to you.
Yeah.
14 days, don't answer it, insurance claim. So it's first resort, you got to be on your toes. One, don't have defective work, obviously.
Yeah.
Fix your defects straight away, or if you don't agree, you have to appeal. So I think it actually, look, not that I'm promoting legal disputation, but it's going to cause more disputes because builders are going to have to dispute defects.
Yeah, so what happens if our client A is like, that is that's a defect and we're going to fight that, and they get found that I was completely within the right, can I now counter sue and get my money back for all the costs against them?
Probably not is the short answer. Yeah. Which is, the way that the system works. It's set up, and that's why I just, not to be the bearer of bad news, but all of these acts are consumer friendly, okay? The consumer's pretty much never, so in the situation when you're talking about a rectification order, that rectification order is made by the Building and Plumbing Commission, not by the owner.
Yeah, okay. So they'll investigate it first.
So they have to look at it and find that it's a defect.
Yeah, okay. Right?
So if they're wrong, you could potentially get a cost order against them, which I'll just say I think that should happen.
Yeah.
And so with...
Someone will challenge that.
Yeah. So with the VBA, with the old VBA / new plumbing commission, if they make determinations on things like protection works and yep. all your disciplinary stuff and they lose, they do pay costs. But, it, yeah, as I say, those things are quite rare.
So, but this is going back. We actually used to be down this like owner first years and years ago.
We did, yeah. Back when I first started, I think it was 1993, I think it was. Actually, no, it's up to about 2000.
Jeez, you are old.
Yeah, there was something called the Housing Guarantee Fund.
Yeah.
And it basically allowed you as a homeowner to say, hey, I think I've got a defect with my property. Housing Guarantee Fund would come out. They used to be essentially what these are, the VMIA now. They'd go, yep, that's worth, you know, $30,000, and they'd basically pay out. And there was the system was set up that the cost of obtaining permits and all those sort of things would go into this fund that funded the Housing Guarantee Fund. And look, the system was pretty good. It was just very limited. They had a maximum payout of $40,000, which now, as we know, that doesn't cover jack. You know,
yeah, covered.
I'm sitting here trying to like understand the logic behind this change.
Mm.
It's because the government fucked up and they need to get confidence back into housing because they need to build 1.2 million homes. It's the reality. It's all about trying to get
because don't you think this is putting like an incredible amount of pressure on builders who are trying to do the right thing? Like it's just putting.
Correct, but I guess what Matt said valid, which is, you know, there is a bit of a checks and balances thing, which is you won't have to have an insurance claim if
do the right thing.
You do the right thing, you don't build defective work, okay? And if you think they're wrong about it, well, you've got your chance to appeal it.
Yeah.
The problem with the old system was builders would be let go too long. Shit builders, right, like Porter Davis, could take a whole lot of insurance and rip people off, and you get, you know, I get clients every day, and a lot of them are new Australians, and they just pay and pay and pay and pay and pay, and then the builder goes under, and they're like, oh my god, and it's not covered by insurance.
Yeah, so okay. People that say, oh yeah, I paid all my the whole bill cost, whole bill, the frame yeah. cost. I'm like, wait, yeah.
And sometimes culturally, okay. right, I'll just yeah. say this: trust. Is it's just he asked me for money and I paid him, and they didn't know any different. They don't know the consumer law.
Mm.
You know, they can't afford legal advice. So this is to basically kind of, I think, you know, put the handbrake on bad builders, I'll say. And, like, I'll just say, if you're a good builder, like you two
shouldn't
would be,
bother us at all.
It's not a concern.
So that's what I was about to say. I was about to actually ask that up. Like, is there a silver lining here? Like, is there a silver lining?
Is it does give, like, I think it gives some consumer confidence.
Yep.
The only thing that I have a real concern is who are the people that are coming out and inspecting? Because I've seen some of the people from the DBDRV, they're really not qualified yeah. to give the opinions, or they'll just kind of do generic, you know, and might be that when they do an inspection, you're kind of mid-stage and it's like, I haven't actually finished. Like, it looks like that because I haven't finished.
I had one that they came during a frame once. This yeah. is the VBA and they're like, your frame, nah, we're going to have to write all these things. It's not to stand. I'm like, we're still framing.
Yeah.
We haven't finished. They failed yeah. the frame before, and then the building inspector got a notice and he's like, they haven't finished it.
Yeah.
Why did the VBA come out?
Because they do the random audits.
Oh, yeah, they can do audits.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Sure.
So they came out for a random audit and then said the frame was defective, but they were literally standing walls up.
It's not finished.
Yeah, it's
yeah. They're not meant to be lying on the ground.
No.
They're not meant. No. They're meant to be standing.
Hard to plaster when they're on the ground.
Yeah. Okay. So people. So I would say I'd hope that most of our listeners are builders wanting to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So if we continue down the track of building better. Building consciously, you know, trying to better ourselves, yeah. managing mold, condensation, all that kind of stuff, then our lives may not change.
I think the good builders, this is to try and weed out the shit builders.
Okay.
Like catch them early.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Building commissions, most of the time, you know, I don't want to use Porter Davis as an example.
Well, we can because they're
insolvent.
Insolvent, yeah.
The problem with those ones is it all happened too late. The horse is bolted. By the time the commission gets involved, the lawyers get involved and the people come and try and slap you on the wrist, you know, the owners, you know, like halfway through, you know, lock-up stage and they've paid 100% of the claim and it's just a disaster. And that costs us as taxpayers, because like a lot of that we have to kind of end up funding.
Yeah.
Like, because the VMIA, we essentially fund that. And there's essentially kind of the checks and balances are happening too late. Yeah. Right. And also, we know that surveyors don't always do their job properly and aren't really, because I think a lot of consumers think, oh, that's right, I've got the building surveyor. The building surveyor doesn't come on site from frame to right finish. Till the end.
Yeah, yeah.
So much shit can go wrong.
Well, I actually raised a question to our insurance company. It's like, can we get our premiums reduced if we do a pre-plus and a waterproof inspect? She goes, that would make sense, but they declined that as an option.
No.
They actually had the option to take that in. He's like,
nah, I'm doing it.
So the other thing I read as well is with this insurance, what they'll do as with 9 years, because it's a 10-year insurance, it's just something we should touch on, because people think that you taught me something last time I was in here, that our insurance is actually 10 years.
It's not. Statutory warranty.
Yeah.
But that's everything though. Correct. It's even non-structural.
Yeah, correct.
So non-structural is still 10 years.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Okay. So what it is, this is just this misconception, and you are not, you know, we're kind of chuckling about it. It is completely misunderstood by builders, okay, that you are not liable for anything after that 6-year period, right? The insurance lasts for 6 years, okay? But I'll just say, if something happens within that 6 years and the owner notifies the insurer within the 6 years, you're liable for a lot longer than 6 years, okay? Put that to one side.
Right.
Separately to that, you are liable to that owner, nothing to do with insurance, for 10 years from the occupancy permit. It's just that the owner, after this, between 6 and 10, there's no insurance there for them to claim on, okay? So they're going straight to you and they're going, hey, come and fix my whatever it is, right? Now, the difference between structural and non-structural is the insurer can deny non-structural defects after 2 years, right? But I'll just say that almost everything now, like waterproofing, becomes structural. You don't do waterproofing, it undermines your structure.
Mm.
You know, you
can always frame, link something back to structure.
Your frame gets wet and then it becomes like balconies. Are they not structural? If they're not structural, they're going to kill someone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So ultimately, if you're a good, to really kind of answer your question, Hamish, is that if you're a good builder, okay, and you're doing good due diligence on your subbies and you're doing quality assurance and that sort of thing, this won't be a problem for you. In fact, you'll become the leader in the industry.
Yeah.
Because you'll have high quality work and you won't have a problem. That's not to say things can't go wrong, but when they go wrong, you will deal with them. You'll deal with them in a way that needs to be kind of methodical and not just ignoring the owners. Because a lot of the time, you know, if you're a builder right now, right in this current regime, you can get away with a lot by doing nothing, because the owners just lose confidence and they've got to go to VCAT, and that takes 2 to 3 years.
Mm. But that's what this bill's changing.
That's changing that, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So the other thing they're doing as well, I was reading, so after your, at 9 years, you'll get the owner will get a letter from the council saying that, hey, you've got one more year on your structural. Right. And then at 10 years, they'll get a letter saying, no, your now structural is finished.
Yeah. So the 10 years is actually all defects.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually wasn't aware of that, but that's to me is just silly. That's telling people to, like, they might have had a problem. The thing is, you probably know if you've got a problem, you know.
You could be a good builder.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd like to think that we're developing these relationships with our clients even before we've started swinging a hammer on site. And, you know, I say that we're testing this relationship, you know, before we actually get to site, because now's the time to do it. We don't want to be testing that when we get to site. People's circumstances can change over, you know, within that 10 years' time, and you might have this amazing relationship with the client through pre-con, through the build, and for 8 years of them living in that home, and then something might change. What's stopping them at that point there becoming like a pain in the ass? Like, if they and like,
well, they might sell the house and someone buys it,
or someone else buys it. Like, I'm not saying that
the amount of times that happens, and just so the viewers and listeners know that's probably the bigger thing. Whereas, because you might have built for, you know, Mary Smith and had a great relationship, she sold to Bugger Lugs.
Yeah.
He might use the property differently. You know, he might actually, so I've had ones where they haven't used the downstairs shower maybe, And then they've used it and gone, oh, crap, like we've actually, the waterproofing failed or we actually never, you know, connected it properly, or there's a break in the sewer or something, right?
Yeah.
And that issue is that you just have to and this is like a really, really simplistic answer, but every problem should be just dealt with methodically as if it's the first time you've ever dealt with it. Is it a genuine building defect or is it an occupational issue? Okay, is it the way they're using it?
And who's determining that?
So ultimately, the ultimate decider of that is the is a court, okay? But if you want to get an opinion on whether who's right or wrong, you should get an expert in that field. Okay.
But who's an expert? A builder?
So I personally don't think builders are great experts, okay? They are on maybe things like framing and maybe things like, but if it's like a plumbing defect, get a plumbing expert. Yeah. Get someone that understands hydraulics. Get someone that understands, you know, falls and can do it.
So that's probably some really good advice, because I think, you know, as builders, I'd say the good builders are real people pleasers.
Yeah.
Right. So they're gonna go out and they're gonna like wax lyrical about what the problem's gonna be.
Yeah.
So you're saying understand what the problem is and then immediately get the expert
thing is just the same as like a same with any medical issue, right? You go and you get diagnosed, okay? But if you're not a doctor, don't diagnose yourself.
Yep. Okay? The world's changed, hasn't it, though?
Yeah.
That's what happens now. I got my advice off TikTok and I must be sick.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, there's the TikTok inspectors who, like, most of them are not qualified, right? So what you need to do is you go, actually, I can see a bit of movement, right? A bit of, like, stuff moves, but you shouldn't have, you know, cracks over 2 mils.
Yeah.
So if you've got a crack over 2 mils, you go, I need an engineer or I need a geotech.
Yeah.
Because I got to work out what's going on with the soil, right? Yeah. What's happening with the foundation. If it's a plumbing defect, right, get a plumber, get a camera down the pipe and see what the hell's going on.
Yeah, you made a comment to me when we caught up, was it maybe earlier this year, where we were looking at for the issue we had with clients calling us back for defects, it was their own fault. And you just said, even if it's their own fault, go check it out
first. Just go and check it and then at least you can say, well, you know, your kid's shoving socks down the toilet or whatever it's doing, you know.
Or are you turning the fan on in your
correct,
you know, in your shower?
Yeah. Because if you're not, you're going to have condensation and mold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So and maybe good gateway to mold then.
Yeah.
Because
is
this just about to make this topic about to make you lawyers a lot of money?
It is, yeah. Yeah. Well, we are lucky, I'll just say, very lucky that we've had no rain, okay? Because the way that if we had had Sydney's rain, there would be properties. I mean, as you well know, most of the houses are built like a bloody tent. So you've got holes and you've got shitty waterproofing and you've got, you know, but at the moment, we're not even seeing signs of that because of the fact that we've really had no rain for, I don't know, like it feels like it's been a year.
So that means in Sydney, but if excessive rain and flooding cause mold, is that still on the builder?
Well, water should not get in a building. The fact is that it will, but it shouldn't get into the point of causing mold. Yeah.
And now there's a clause in the contract, in the NCC, that says something like, you know, only have 10% of mold and therefore it's defective. Like category 3 of mold is more than 10%. 10% of what? Who knows?
Yeah.
But that is scary because
10% of an area, is that what
you mean? But they're trying, like there's, from what I understand, this court case is the moment they're trying to determine what 10% of an area is. Is it of a 50-cent coin? Is it under a microscope? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
I've been told there's 3 court cases right now about that, but it's scary because like the way we build, we're safe.
Yeah.
Or majorly
it's,
safe.
It's still, well, I mean, it still makes you think though, like, you know, because mistakes can happen.
Yeah.
You know, like. Yeah, I mean, it's so timely we're doing this webinar tonight. Water kills buildings. Like,
it does, hands,
like the biggest killer in a building is going to be water, and that can be coming from the inside or the outside. So it's managing both.
Yeah.
And understanding how water moves through a building envelope is probably something that is now becoming a thing, and people are getting more educated on it, which is really great. But I'm interested to see, like, the first court case that actually holds a builder liable for having mold in a home, I think is going to be a pretty scary
thing. There has been some, which I'll shoot through.
Yeah.
Normally it's, you know, in connection with maybe a separate quite significant defect, like about like it's normally waterproofing on a balcony.
Yeah.
Okay. Or
so why
in summary, don't build balconies.
Yeah, but like with all these changes, why didn't they do waterproofing inspections? It would have solved so much.
I know. Like honestly, there's probably I think what it is at the moment, they're finding it extremely difficult to get people to be building surveyors because building surveyors, because the builders are so hard to get, right? Because all they do is, you know, they'll just, as we're talking about before, they'll tank their company and, yeah, they might pay out on one policy, but really, like, the builder is a pretty bad target, right? Because they're worth nothing and the insurance is so hard to get to because you've got to make them insolvent or take it all away. Building surveyors, the complete opposite, easy to get to. They're a target,
right?
Okay. And they've got insurance.
And so it's a lot, the insurance.
So to get a building surveyor, like there's a massive shortage of building surveyors because all the good ones have either retired or moved to Queensland. And
why Queensland?
I don't know why, but they just have. And then they're actually hard. In fact, I'll give you a quick anecdote. Is it's way harder to sue someone if they're in another state. It just is. It's just the way that the law works.
Right.
You can't have – the matters can't be heard in VCAT. It's a nightmare. So you have to find ways of getting them. Anyway, long story short is I think the thinking is with more inspections means – more chances for the building surveyor to get sued, basically.
Right, so, okay.
Because they need to check. And they, like with waterproofing, it is hard, right? Because you probably need to look before and after. Yeah, you got to go look before you do the tiles or do the bathroom, wet areas.
Everyone has these now, right?
Yeah.
Why can't they implement something where you're uploading into a portal?
That like A-Connex type.
Or have a VBA inspection where you log on and like you do the plumbing inspection for your sewer, you got to log your waterproofing inspection. And if they come, they come. If they don't, they can't, don't. And it's randomised.
Yeah, that's not a bad time.
And it's super easy because then they're now the ones holding accountable. Like if they come and inspect it and say it's fine, it's on the VBA. But then
whoever it is,
plumbing commission.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah, that would be a great way. I mean,
just like a random sample.
The only reason why I think is probably the same with everything is budgetary. Like, do they have the budget to do that? I would have thought, doing that is just as important, given what we just talked about with mold, just as important as the base and the frame, you know, like obviously.
It's probably more important. That's probably what fails more. It's the number one insurance claim.
But if they're sitting here like complaining about there's no budget for it, what is the actual real cost when something fails?
Yeah.
Or the health cost on
it. Be massive.
Like, it's going to be hard to put a number to it too.
What was quite ironic is that the government spent like billions of dollars on the cladding thing.
Yeah.
On the strength of one fire. Okay.
Yep.
Maybe two. Okay.
Yep.
Where nobody died, and thank God for that. Okay. And I don't know if you've watched, if your Big listeners Grenfell. Or you have watched Grenfell, that is absolutely horrific and like it's crazy to watch.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's really bad how the whole cladding, you know, of buildings became so dangerous. Okay.
So we're talking about like petroleum based cores of external claddings, which are obviously incredibly flammable.
Correct. Yeah. And at La Crosse Tower in Melbourne, it went from the, I think it was the 9th floor to the 40th floor in about 28 seconds.
Wow.
So it's wild. Okay. Now, the reason why that wasn't as dangerous is because the cladding didn't kind of wrap into the building. It was just an external thing.
Facade,
Whereas Grenfell, they just let it burn. They thought it was going to burn out. They just let it burn for essentially hours, and then
nothing happened.
It was like 90 people.
And they told everyone to stay inside. They'll be under control.
That was the rule at the time.
It's on Netflix. It's unreal.
Stay in shelter. I honestly would recommend it to everyone. It's very confronting, but very
relevant,
educational,
and just how the building, how building structures have changed over time. So, and how we basically moved to this ACP, Aluka Bond panel, which basically was built from petrol, essentially, you know, condensed petrol on the outside of a building. It makes absolutely no sense. Anyway, the point of the story is that they did a big cladding audit, Victorian government, and, you know, it all makes sense. And ironically, the VBA was covered in a Aluka Bond panel, which is great. and they you know, get an order, and places were ordered to take their stuff off. When they took the stuff off, which had done nothing, like, you know, there'd been no fires and no issue, the actual way bigger problem is all the mold and the rot and the, you know, the disintegration from water ingress that had occurred behind the panels, which was just completely ignored. And that's a way bigger problem that exists across every house.
I mean, I'm just going to call out, also just call out some irony here, is that we've got these changes now in the Act, which is probably going to make builders more exposed to risk when there is a mold issue.
Yeah.
And yet they're freezing the NCC and they're not taking into consideration of ventilated cavities, and they're not introducing waterproofing inspections.
Mm.
So surely these two things should run parallel with each other.
Yeah, they should. Like, I absolutely agree.
I want to know that, like, fast forward 10, 15 years, because I think they're 100% going to put a levy to fix all the problems because of the mold and condensation, like every other country has done, where it's Canada did it. New Zealand have a $64 billion problem fixing it right now.
New Zealand had so I act in VCAT and building matters. In New Zealand, it's called the leaky building syndrome. And we have the exact thing. They have a leaky building list that just hears cases about leaky buildings. It's like, are we just ignoring the fact that we're like only, you know, what is it, maybe
I'd like to say you heard it first here, but we've been talking about this for ages.
The crazy thing is, I reckon 15 years we're going to have in some form of a levy to pay this off, where every build you've got to have, it's $1,000 to pay back the problem.
Yeah.
But I want to know in the future, because we build the way we do, can we like go, hey, I don't want to pay that?
Probably not, no. Like, law doesn't work like that.
Do you know the irony of the situation is that because we're the good builders, we're the ones that are going to be there, and we're the ones that
the other guys are under.
They're doing something else. So it's good. Okay. So by doing the right thing now, we're going to pay for it later. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yes. Yeah, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah. So it's not good news for everybody.
So be a builder.
Be a good builder, you're going to pay for it in the future.
Yeah, be a good builder, get a good lawyer, understand your contracts.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I actually think, which you guys would know better than anybody, that it really comes down to the people that you put your trust in, which is a lot of the subbies, okay? Yeah. And with waterproofing, the problem with that whole industry is it's just like unqualified / kind of regulated, right? There's not, like, you know, if you're dealing with a plumber, Matt, like, they've done a 2 or 3 year apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Four year apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Right. You've done an apprenticeship. You've worked and you've seen how waterproofers. No, I'm not going to name any names. I know someone that's a waterproofer. I wouldn't trust him to take my dog for a walk. I don't have a dog, but like, I wouldn't trust him to do one single thing. Okay. Hammer a nail in a wall.
So waterproofing is an interesting one, because I know we've got a group chat, and you do all your own
water. No, I'm thinking of bringing it in house because we can fully control it.
So we've
– nah, yeah, but the thing is, but, so like, but
you're liable anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm signing off on it regardless. So I might as well have my team trained up over years.
Interesting. Yeah, and then okay. So like, you train them up. Yeah.
That's then, probably not a bad show.
And then introduce an independent inspection to come check it off and be like, well, if anything happened, be like, you also signed off on it.
Interesting. But aren't you putting that onus onto your team then?
But the onus is already on me.
Yeah, okay. See, I mean, we use it. We've got a good waterproofer. I've been using Paul for a number of years now. I trust what he does, and he's very methodical.
Do you get a certificate from the VBA?
I get a certificate from him.
This is a VBA certificate?
Is there one?
No, well, aren't they technically meant to sign off on it?
Huh? According to what?
But like, when we put our license down on a building permit, we take responsibility for all of it.
Yeah, but you get like your plumbing to tick? Yeah, you get your. This is to get the OP, isn't it?
Do you send the building, say, his certificate? Or do you write
a letter? Yeah, no, I get a certificate from the waterproofer.
Yeah.
And then, I know with Dave, he makes us write a thing saying that all waterproofing is installed within line with 3740.
No, I say C certificate issued by so and so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Is that person qualified?
I know that I've got two that do. So one do my external and one do my internal. So I separate those two because Paul just does external waterproofing and Simon just does.
I've used Paul for external before. Yeah. But do they have a VBA registration waterproofing?
No. They don't need one.
I don't know.
Isn't that the point we're making?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, okay. At the end of the day, I'm not saying because your license is on the permit.
But yeah, you're probably right. I mean, look, if there are owners or future clients listening, like, you know, we're following the most logical steps in our understanding right now to make sure that the houses don't.
So I think you personally, it should be all waterproofing, should be a full license trade. If you want to do it, you've got to go through like a 4-week course at the
DBA. I don't disagree with it at all.
It's like that you have to do the waterproofing course. The issue is the waterproofing standard actually contradicts itself at the moment. So they're rewriting it, and we've got someone coming on to talk about that. And he was essentially saying that it's impossible to make a waterproof bathroom comply to the standard right now. Can't do it. Physically impossible, because it also contradicts the livability guidelines where you've got to have
a stepless, but then
you've got to have a step that's 5 mil raised. So now you contradict that.
Yeah, we have this big thing with water stops.
And
it's like a major concern in terms of, you know, oh, it hasn't got a water stop. It's like, but in order to create enough fall, I couldn't put a water stop in. Or
this is the other thing. And then people argue that you need a PVC water stop. We use aluminium. It doesn't say anywhere in the code.
I think the exposed water stop looks crap.
Yeah, it looks weird. Looks it's like a trip hazard.
I don't find it. If you match, we get ours powder coated to match a tile.
Yeah, I mean, we did too. And we would typically have it sitting flush.
Yeah, you have to have it flush.
Yeah, and like, there's actually been times where I've scraped it out with Dave, made me do it, scrape it out to show him that there was a stop there. I go,
the amount of times that it gets alleged that there's no stop, but there is one.
Yeah.
Like the water, we just assume that there's not one.
We get photos.
Yeah, so I think like your point's valid, which is there are way easier ways to do this. As you just said, like, why can't you just go,
a portal? Hey,
here's me doing the thing, like photo of the. Because that's what I know plumbers do. They'll just take, because once the slab's down, you can't see lots of stuff, right? But like, why you can't just have an up, like a job, like an A-Connex for the job. Here's the waterproofing. Here's how we did the tiles. Here's how we did the underfloor heating or whatever it is, because once it's covered, you know.
I would argue if you're not doing that as a builder right now, then you need to start doing it for your own record. Because what we've heard now in this chat today is that you want to have all the evidence that you can possibly have to prove that you've done something in a certain way.
The VBA can create an online portal. You don't have to use it. You can use it. They'd encourage you to use it. And what they could do is simply, you have all your job stages along the way. You can just upload your photos so it sits there.
Exactly like we do with Passive House.
With Passive House. And then that way, they can start to see quickly who's using it. They'd be like, oh, they're probably at lower risk than the person that's not. But
yeah, why not?
Yeah, that
would be so
cheap. Premium should work like that. The more you upload, the less complaints, the less your premium.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway,
back to the chat. What other changes are happening?
So I've got the bill here. I can read it from the start. No, I won't do that.
You can read it. Go for it.
So the stuff with the new commission's kind of already started. The new insurance will be the 1st of July next year, almost certainly.
And we don't know how that's working yet, though.
We don't know, but it'll be basically what I said, rectification orders. So first resort, you get.
And is this going to replace the current homeowner's?
Yeah, correct. So the old died, disappeared, insolvent triggers won't exist anymore.
But this is grandfathered now, so my clients now won't fall under.
No,
this.
So yeah, it all. So this is why, and this is maybe the best takeaway from this discussion, is if like builders are probably better off on the current regime, I'd be signing your contracts before July next year. As many as you can, okay? Because one, the insurance is going to get probably jacked up cost-wise after, and also, I mean, it might be that they just, you know, have a whole new test on whether, I mean, like, you guys will pass the test, but what I'd suggest is that we, you know, that you should get as many contracts as you can under the old regime, because we don't actually know how this other one's going to work, okay? Now, it might work out to your benefit, but you might.
Are we going to know before July?
Probably not. No, they won't tell you that it's coming in. So we'll know by probably
30th of July.
Yeah, 30th of June. Just with the other new act. So
when we say new act, is this
currently before Parliament? Okay,
okay. It's a new act. It's not going to be the Domestic Building Contracts Act. It's going to be a completely new.
That's being updated.
That's being updated. So yeah, you are right. It's a bill to introduce new sections to the Domestic Building Contracts Act.
Yep.
It's going to, in some senses, help builders, because it's going to move the definition of the implied warranties can then be claimed. So you can have claims against developers now. So as a consumer, if say I'm the property owner and I get Matt to build for me and I sell to you, Hamish, you can sue both of us. Okay, which is good because instead of you carrying the can for everything.
Yeah, so if I'm you're a client, you're like, we're going to sell it in 5 years. You're technically a developer.
Yep, correct. Yep.
Okay.
So,
right.
So does that mean that developer now, do they have to hold the 2% as the client?
No, they don't. So if, unless you do more than one lot.
Yeah, okay.
So
hang
on, can I just talk about for a sec? So you're saying that the definition of a developer includes a mum and dad.
Yep.
Right, okay. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So in the end, what it's going to mean is it just kind of spreads that. So what it says is a developer means a person who enters into one or more contracts for the construction of two or more homes.
Two or
more,
okay.
Yeah. Or?
Yeah, or one or more building which is intended for sale, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. So if they've already got a contract in place, so
Define intended for sale, though.
In 5 years' time, you go, oh, I want to sell now. Well, that's not what you intended.
Yeah, how do you prove that at the time? Like, how are we going to prove?
You need to have a contract. For them to fit the one, you have to have entered into a contract of sale.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you sell after, that's fine.
Yeah, okay.
I get you.
And look, I'll just say a lot of stuff we deal with, I'm sure you deal with it as well, is, you're working for developers. You know,
no, I'm actually one of my questions when someone reaches out to me, I'm like, do we intend on selling the home?
Yeah, how long are you going to live in the house?
And if they're like, oh, we intend on, like, it's just a bit, probably 5 years, I'm like, see ya, you're not for us. We want mum and dad.
You want to stay, you want to build their home.
As are usually 10 plus.
Forever homes.
10 plus. Yeah.
Yes, variations. This is changing on how it's moving to the regulations.
Essentially, you need, in terms of notices, if you haven't complied, you're not entitled to, so you have to prepare a written variation. If you haven't complied, you've basically got no chance of recovery except in the most exceptional circumstances.
Okay, so we're talking about variations to work. So
not to the plan. So
yeah, no, so if upgrades. If I go and do something and I haven't got that signed off and then it kind of gets kicked down the road.
You're knackered.
And then the client's like, if you've got a bit of a dickhead, saying, well, we haven't signed a variation.
Correct.
So, I mean, look, good builders
should be.
You know, I've got an email thread that I jumped in on Monday saying plaster going on the wall next Tuesday. That variation hasn't been resolved yet. We need to get that in front of the client in the next 24 hours and get it signed off on.
Correct. And look, I'll just probably say, like, it took a bit for, so the same thing applies for us as lawyers now, right? If we have a change in scope, you just can't do it without the client acknowledging that it's going to be an increase. Now, even if they ask for it, which most of the time I'm sure that your clients are asking for the change.
And it's on in work,
even if they're asking for it and they know it's happening and they watched you do it, doesn't matter.
So here's a question for you. How formal does that process have to
be? Just in writing is fine. Okay,
so what about a text message? They're acknowledging.
Look, text message would probably cover it. So let me just quickly read
and
it.
And I'll use an example. Daniel, we're about to put this light fitting in, which you've changed on the fly, and I need to rough it in now.
It does say there's exception for urgent where it's a danger to health or property. Other than that, they must be in writing, signed by both parties.
Okay, but if I send you a
text message, won't cover it.
So, even worse, so if I
unless you do DocuSign.
So what if I'm now on site and we're doing excavation, we hit rock?
Stop work. You should just go, I mean, like, not to be a dickhead. One, I've got to do a minimum, right?
Yeah.
Have to, because it's going to take more time.
So, okay, so rock's a great one because I'm experiencing this at the moment and luckily we've got a signed variation from the client. I'm like, I don't know how long this is going to take.
Yep.
We haven't agreed.
So all you need to do is say when it started, okay? And I'll tell you how long it took when it's finished.
Yeah, okay.
This will delay you. I'll let you know how long later.
But the cost, I've got no idea what the cost
is. You just, so you got to go away.
You just do it as a provisional sum. Can you do a variation?
You can do rock, in my opinion, rock / any foundational stuff should be a provisional sum.
Because
it's too dangerous.
But also in the contract, it says you can't do cost escalation for a rock.
So that's one of the changes I've just about.
Can I just circle back for a sec? So foundation work. So say if I'm digging footings for a slab, should my slabs now be provisional?
So
I always do my slabs provisional.
You can, but as Matt just said, you can't You can't then claim for something that you wouldn't have been aware of had you done proper investigations.
Yep.
And that's the foundation's data, yep. like geotech stuff.
We can just go, if a geotech says there's rock, we actually in our contract go, have to make a rock allowance.
Yeah, so we've allowed 20 grand. If it's 50 grand, then the owner pays the 30 plus a margin.
Yep, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a whole bit around cost escalation, which I won't go into. It's actually quite confusing. But there's a bit more scope now for builders to have cost escalation and increasing prices to allow for, you know, what's happened really in the last 5 years.
But only for contracts over $1 million at the moment.
Essentially, yes. If you've got $1 million, you can't have it's less than $1 million, you can't have a cost escalation clause. And if you do, you have to have sign the prescribed form.
So we don't know this. Am I now getting you to write that as a special condition, or there'll be something just in
there?
There'll
be something in there, yeah. Yes. So they'll have to amend. So MBAV,
HIA,
and whoever else is writing them, because CAV at one stage wrote a contract, but those two entities, ABIC as well.
Oh, we're going to get to ABIC in a second.
Yeah, your favourite. I actually bought an ABIC in before. I was about to show you how bad it was. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
What are your thoughts on ABIC contracts?
I hate them with a passion.
Why?
They're just so clunky.
Yeah, you need two pieces of paper to read. You need the same contract twice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you got to have the terms and the appendix or whatever. It's just, to me, it's just like, I mean, if you're using an architect, yeah, maybe they're useful. I find the MBAV contract and the HIA contract quite easy to use. Okay, it complies with all the requirements of the Domestic Building Contracts Act as it currently exists.
And you can put in the special conditions for a superintendent if you want to go down that path, or prescribed inspections with the architect.
Correct. You can put in lots of things. I mean, at one point, Matt came to me with what could only be described as the worst shopping list in the history of mankind, most of which were internally inconsistent. However, you've narrowed it down to a nice 5 or 6 special conditions.
We've got about 15 still.
15, okay.
But a lot of them are like simple. Like
yours is like the ability to use your marketing and stuff.
Yeah,
good. We have a clause in there for oversized doors.
We might have
most people read it now and go, they don't want, oh, that makes sense.
No, they're good. They're easy. They're easy to read. Yeah. I've seen ones from, like, I'll just say they're more like new builders who have stolen them from other people. And what it is they actually just create an inconsistency with what is very reasonable general conditions.
I think the HIA, I mean, I use the HIA contract. I think it's a great contract.
Special conditions override anything in the contract.
They do. Yeah. And that's the problem, because if you're overriding the general condition and the general condition makes more sense, it creates this inconsistency.
And people get confused. And that's when you as a lawyer can argue.
Yeah. Well, I can say we're using the special condition, which makes no sense, but that's what it says. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. What else is there?
Okay. So
there's a lot to cover.
We talked a little bit about how they're going to do progress payments.
That's still really not known.
This is going to be, I think, up for debate.
Just a question for the progress claims.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use some really simple understanding of contracts.
Yep.
Can you sign a contract between two parties and agree on any changes? So if the contract doesn't allow to have the progress claims that we want,
yep.
are you able to append a contract?
A schedule. How you want to do
it. How we want it.
Yeah. I'll say yes, subject to, we haven't seen the finer details. Okay.
Yep.
However, I'd be shocked if you couldn't do a very similar thing to Method B. Now, Method B was made under regulations. The reason why I'm talking about that is the Act probably won't even tell builders how to do it. They'll just say, what they'll say is what you can't do.
Yeah, okay.
What you can't do as a builder is you can't ever seek money before it's actually been spent in terms of the value. So it's essentially trying to avoid prepayments because they don't like prepayments. The only prepayment you make is the deposit. That's everything else.
The bank then.
Well, that's fine. Make the deposit bigger.
Unfortunately, commercial versus domestic is, you know, the balance of power is with the consumer. Like your balance of power is back here. Whereas in a building, in a commercial contract, you can go, I'm 50% before I've even, you know, turned up. online.
Our trades, this is the other thing. Then, so this flows on to trades. Are trades now forced to follow these same
terms? What the modern method of construction, so the methodology of why that, and why I think eventually you will get more flex, is they might let you start seeking more significant deposits for subcontractors, for materials, for
As we move to more offsite fabrication, like you have to, you have to do it, like windows, frames. If all of a sudden,
bench tops, that could be $50,000.
Yeah,
what are you going to fork it out?
So if one of my trades comes to me and says I want a 50% deposit, is that illegal?
No, the trade can do it because the trade's not governed by the Domestic Building Contracts Act.
So that, but then, okay, so what are they covered by this?
Nothing. Yeah.
So really, your subcontractor agreement.
Your subcontractor between you and the subby is the same as you, like building, like for, you know, LU Simon or something. You're not covered by, you're not the consumer. They're not a consumer.
So the only person this really applies to is anyone. What if they had like a carpentry license?
Doesn't matter, it makes no difference.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. The contract with you, so the Domestic Building Contracts Act governs the relationship between you as the builder and the owner, and that's it.
If I was a builder and I was getting a licensed carpentry crew in, would I be signing a domestic building contract with them?
Are you going to be the builder on the job or not?
Yep.
Yeah, you would need to get DBU or else you couldn't get insurance.
No. I'm talking about like if I get a license, a DBL to come in and do the frame, and I'm the DBU, would I be signing a domestic building contract with them?
No.
Okay, so they're just a contractor.
They're a contractor,
So that only comes into play if we've got owner builders.
Yep.
So really, as a builder, we have nowhere to move. Like we're actually quite, it's very structured.
Very rigid,
Okay.
And look, you know, at the end of the day, I guess it's kind of...
I get it.
You know, the home is their, you know, their dream and they probably do it once in their life and most owners actually have no idea what they're signing a lot of the time. I mean, a lot of the time I speak to, why'd you do that?
We have a lot of homeowners listening to this podcast. Yeah. What would your advice be?
I would get, like, this is it sounds self-interested, but you should get advice. Like, people go and buy homes and flats and car parks and, you know, a car and you probably get legal advice, right? Maybe not a car, but you buy a flat, right? If you buy an apartment in a building, the chances of something being wrong are actually extremely minimal, right? You've got owner's corporation. You've probably got, in terms of, you're basically buying airspace, right? The chances of something going wrong with a finished product, right? But you're going to get a lawyer to look at it. Oh, yes, it says settlement in 90 days and 10% deposit.
It's like, sweet. But you negotiated it yourself.
A building contract. Probably, what's the average contract now? $500,000? A mil?
Everything's over a mil, it seems.
Yeah, a mil. Owners don't get them looked at. Like, it's actually bonkers.
Yeah.
There's things with time. There's things with cost escalation. There's rock. There's, you know.
Weather. Just even weather. Just time
delays. Weather. There's... material shortages, there's variations, there's payment schedules, there's who's the subby, who's the builder, who's the insurer, who's the building surveyor. Like all those things, moving parts, and they're not getting advice. It's just career suicide to me.
Yeah. So your advice is for homeowners to when your builder gives the contract for review, you should go and get that looked at.
You should absolutely do that and you should also do your due diligence on the builder.
Yep.
It's really easy to do. Google's extremely helpful. I don't know if anyone knows about that.
So what was that?
Google.
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 How about Bing?
Bing doesn't work.
Ask GPT.
Just GPT. but you should do some. To be honest, I'd go as far as to say, hey, can I come and see a little bit of your work?
We invite them all.
It's a great idea.
I sat down with a client before this today, potential client, and I said, look, mate, I've got a project around the corner. We're doing exactly what you're asking if we can do in your house. Why don't you come and talk to my trades? Yeah. Why don't you come and talk to my supervisors?
Yeah.
The client lives out the back. Have a chat with the client.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, now when someone reaches out, our first thing is like, what reference do you want? We won't even tell the client.
How many do you want? Like how many phone numbers do you want?
Yeah. Well, soon now we're about to move in our house. I'll give Nicole as a client, as my wife, and probably have no more work.
That's not
I did actually say. Have, there was a case that I did once, and when the builder got a complaint, they said, oh, look, you know, what we'll do is I'll send you over to this guy named Ron Jenkins, right? Anyway, and then Arnie gets an email. He's like, I'm Ron Jenkins. I'm your client liaison. I'll deal with your dispute. And the client's like, oh, great. I've got Ron on the job. Da, da, da. Anyway, as the kind of thing progressed, it worked out that Ron didn't exist. It was just an alter ego of the actual builder. But it was like their way of creating this, you know, dispute resolution kind of party. So, you know, you could do that. You could.
I don't know if that's genius or that's illegal.
Yeah. No, it's not illegal. You're allowed to do it.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, we've covered a lot today, and I kind of feel like this could be like a 10-part.
maybe a regular.
or maybe regular too. I mean, maybe this is my way of getting free legal advice.
Yeah, it's actually a great way.
So
can
we just go back? But you say owners should get legal advice. I think builders should.
I was just about to say that. That was going to be my follow-up. Yeah.
And what I'd suggest is get in early, because then I'm not conflicted.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So how? I mean, I'm going to be grabbing your details after this for sure. Yeah. So how do people get in contact with you?
Yeah. So our firm is Oldham Construction Lawyers. It's up here. We act for a lot of builders like Matt, who I've known for a long time, and kind of seeing you develop over the years. And
but it's not acting; it's actually just guiding us to do the right thing.
Most of the time, when I say act, there's actually been zero disputes.
You've probably had zero disputes because you've
It's prevention.
Like, also, sometimes you'll ring me and I'll say you should just go and look at it.
Yeah,
and then it gets resolved.
Prevention is better than cure.
But I'll just say, when you come to see me, I've gone, look, your terms and conditions are really clunky. You need to strip them back, okay? And also, here's the things in your contract that I reckon you need to think about.
Time, you didn't say that. You said they suck.
Yeah, they suck, okay? But time, like the way you break up your stage payments was actually really good.
When you say time,
how you calculate time. And making sure you're taking into account the fact that, you know, the surveyor can take a long time to get a permit, and the, you know, the owner can take. So just
are you talking about the length of time?
Because the duration starts once the demolition is completed, hasn't it?
Not so that depends on the contract. Most of the time, it's a deemed start date, which is 14 days after the building permit. So if you read HIA clause 8.
Most of the time
I'm probably just getting some free legal advice. Yeah. So we issue a start notice.
Yeah, so that's great, okay? I'll just tell you, I've acted for 10,000 builders. I reckon I've seen commencement notices like 4 times.
Oh, we're doing one every builder.
Yeah. Every job.
Yeah, so a lot of people
every
don't do them.
Every job.
I thought I was standard.
Okay.
It actually says that you've got it in my CRM.
It says you've got to do it, no one does it.
I've got it in my CRM that goes out automatically, but a lot of the time I override it. But yeah, we'll issue a...
It's like the easiest thing, because then you know, that's when I started.
Yeah.
It's like saves you all the work.
The only thing I'd say is that you can send it, if you were deemed to have started earlier, then it doesn't matter when you send it.
Yeah, so that's probably another whole...
Yeah, so there's a deeming provision.
Deeming, yeah. But could you technically override that though?
No, you can't. So what it says is the earlier of, so when you send the commencement notice or 14 days after the building permit. So just read your contract. Coming in and just going through it, and like Matt and I have done provisional sums, how to use provisional sums.
I think
sums
you used
smartly.
You had Dylan from Olin Projects coming. I think you met Dylan. I think he come through and he got whipped into shape. He's like... Don't know why.
Do you know what? I think getting ripped in the shape is a bloody
good
thing.
It's
a bloody good
like,
thing.
It's just, hey, you're not using the contract to its full, you know, extent. Because, yes, it's consumer friendly, but there's ways to make sure that you're also getting enough.
Yeah,
getting enough capital to run the job.
It's probably one of the smartest things that I've done as a business. One, because it not only protects myself from doing things correctly, but also protects my clients.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if anything was to go wrong, it's clear.
As you were saying before, if your subby asks you for 50%, right, and you're like, I actually can't afford that, right, and you're like, well, that's going to tip me over the edge, that doesn't help your client either. Yeah. You not being able to finish doesn't help anyone.
Yeah.
They're paying rent. They're paying.
I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this like explicitly, but I've got a overheads calculator in my business, right? And I apportion certain chunks of money when I'm forecasting every year. So accountant, bookkeeper, blah, 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 blah. Is there a number that you would just say, like a baseline number for a medium, or not a small builder yeah. like us, like 10 grand, 15 grand worth of legal fees that we should just include in our...
Oh, no, you, honestly?
3 grand.
All right, 3 grand, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, not even that.
But that's good to know. But just even you saying that probably welcomes the conversation.
I'd even go, I'd go 2 grand, right, and maybe spend $1,500 on a good accountant to make sure that you're kind of also... maximizing the like there's a lot
my,
I'm my sure
account,
that you've
my
got a good
account cost me 25 grand a year.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well,
wait, hold on.
That's
yeah, 25
quite high, is that including your
everything, the whole top to bottom
bookkeeping is on
top to bottom.
Yeah
it's high.
It's high anyway. Yeah. Doesn't matter. And then I mean, maybe
Mike, I hope you're listening, mate. We're gonna have a chat about after this.
But I'll just say maybe sitting down with me for either owner or builder will probably, you may go, oh, that was helpful, but I'll probably never use it again. But I'd say the advice I've given maybe you on special conditions and provisional sums and
ABI contracts. If you are a builder wanting to do an ABI contract,
they're a nightmare.
You're a fucking idiot if you don't come do it straight out.
Yep, great.
Awesome. But you need to get in contact with Daniel.
Daniel@oclawyers.com.au. You can email me. I'm normally responsive. Don't ring the phone because I never answer.
You're also on OnlyFans as well.
CaptainWhoppers.com.
Or if you want to get onto him, Dan isn't on OnlyFans. So you can't Google him that I know of. But you can get onto, even reach out to us. We'll be tagged in all the social media
the
and stuff.
The website is oclawyers.com. We're on Instagram.
TikTok.
We're on TikTok. No, we're on TikTok. We're on LinkedIn and Facebook. Do people still use Facebook?
If you're over 80.
I've gotten a bit active lately with the comments.
I just can't deal with Facebook. It's the boomer generation that they think it's everything is just...
I'm not far off that, to be honest.
Yeah, but 50 soon.
Yeah.
But thank you for thank you for everything. Like
no
it
worries.
Goes back to what I just said before. It's some of the best things I've ever done was sit down with you and go through, because we don't get taught this as builders. We just are expected to fill out a contract and off you go.
There's
no education.
Owners and builders alike there should be some kind of, warning or get advice or that's it.
Cool.